Me and all of our family, my other siblings, we are all completely devastated. We're gutted, totally gutted. It was not the outcome that we anticipated or expected to come from Friday. And so for us, we're really having to consider now different ways and different things that we can do to secure justice for Lyra. So we haven't been languishing in pity. We've been actively engaging to try and find a way.
They say it's the old saying, it's the hope that kills you. When you were going through the trial and it was exhaustive, a couple of years, and the fact that the trial was taken to begin with, was there always an element of this could be the outcome, or was the consensus among you that the preferred outcome would have come to pass?
Well, to tell you the truth, we thought that we might have lost one of the people on the murder charge. However, we were very confident that we would get the other two. Very confident we would get guilty verdicts for the other two. So it has all come as a complete shock to us because it was not what we were anticipating at all.
Have you seen the entire judgment, Nicola, at this point?
The entire judgment isn't out until Friday, so we'll not be able to see it until then.
In what you have been exposed to so far, do you have any understanding as to why this decision was reached as it was? Like, are you sympathetic to the arguments that you've heard from the judge so far? Not to the people, don't get me wrong. I mean, to the legal basis of this decision, really, is the question I'm asking.
Well, I'm an English teacher and not a solicitor or a lawyer of any nature, so I don't know the law, to tell you the truth. I mean, I think some of the things that she was requiring of the prosecution and the PS&I investigation team were completely irrational. I think the expectation was so high that she held that no one could ever in any other trial provide some of the level of information and evidence that she wanted. So in my view, to go from the 27th of February when we were told there was a case to answer and that a jury could convict based upon the evidence, to then end up with not a single person charged with murder being found guilty at the end of it, it is really shocking to us.
You talked of the need for an end to the culture of silence. The information is out there that I presume would have almost guaranteed convictions in this case. A lot of people witnessed. Obviously, there's a lot of intimidation out there, but there are people that know things. The fact that people are holding on to that information, do you understand it, or does it compound frustration or whatever emotions that you're feeling in relation to this?
Well, it is extremely frustrating, because there are people potentially still with information and potentially still with evidence who could have turned the tide of the trial and for it to go in our favour. So it's really difficult to see why someone wouldn't want people who have committed these crimes to be served prison sentences. It doesn't make any sense to me. But what it does speak to is the fact that the legacy of the Troubles in Northern Ireland has not yet been properly dealt with. Here we are, what, 27, 28 years after the agreement, and people are still frightened to speak out in their own communities, frightened by what paramilitary elements could do to them. And that should not be the case. And Hand in hand with that is that in some communities in Northern Ireland, there is still a great mistrust of the policing service. And by this stage of the process towards, you know, a conflict-free society, we shouldn't be in this situation. Communities should feel trusting of the police service, and they should not be in a situation where they should be fearing the backlash of paramilitary organisations. And so this really is a failure in dealing with that legacy, and more needs to be done to address that. Otherwise, more situations like this will arise.
Yes, because there are people, and they may well be listening to this programme, that would have great sympathy on one hand for you and the family, and on the other hand might have information, and they're making a conscious decision for whatever reason, and in their own minds it might be a legitimate reason to withhold that information and not to act on the sympathy that they might have for you, for the family, for Lyra.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I would ask them to really search in their consciences and search in their hearts, and just to consider that on the night that Lyra was killed, really anyone could have been killed. And if it had have been one of their family members rather than mine, would they want me to come forward with my information? Because I would say that they would. Mm. And I would ask them to re-examine their consciousness, and if they do have information that could be helpful, even at this stage, to bring it forward. And if they're not comfortable bringing it forward to the police, bring it to me. Bring it to me. I will handle that information in the most anonymous and sensitive way possible. But, you know, at the end of the day, they have to search their hearts and minds and ask themselves, can they live with themselves?
It's very, very tough.
For taking a part.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Nicola, I thought you were finished. It's very tough for you because, you know, rather than you or your siblings or anyone affected by this being able maybe now to start processing loss and grief and trauma, you're still locked into them having to be campaigners, having to be advocates, having to be fighters to try and get to the bottom of this. And that's just really regrettable because I believe it would be to me a great burden on top of loss and grief and trauma. You know, that rather than being able to wake up today and maybe being able to move through more effectively some of the things I've just referenced, you still have to be in fight mode.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, one of the things that this whole prolonged process over the course of the past 7 years and more has been that we all have been stunted and prevented from grieving properly for not only Lyra, but for our mother that passed away 11 months later with a broken heart. And that's cruel. I think that that's cruel. I think that holding us in the past and forcing us into a position where, you know, we can't use our time and our energy to build up Lyra's legacy, but rather we have to use our time and energy now to continue to fight the good fight to get justice for Lyra. Yeah. And that's cruel. That's cruel.
Outside of new information coming forward, can the system deliver justice for Lyra, if the truth be told? And if not, maybe that's a failure of that system.
Well, I think, you know, it all depends on what happens going forward from this point. I mean, if someone brings forward very significant evidence that could prove useful, could take it over the line, that would be different. But it would have to be very compelling and new evidence that hasn't already been brought before the court, you know. Mm. And potentially it could go that way. But, you know, I want people to take accountability for what they did. I want people to be known as the people who killed Lyra McKee, the people who are responsible for the whole orchestration of events that ended with her murder. And whether we get justice through a criminal court or a court of law or whatever it might be, I want those people unmasked.
Mm. Obviously, Lira is the victim of a murder and has been the subject of this campaign for justice, but she's obviously was so much more than that in what she contributed in her life. If you don't mind, Nicola, would you finish up by just telling us a little bit about your sister and what she was like as a sibling, and sort of just an opportunity to sort of remember that way as well?
She was the sweetest person that you could ever know. She was the most generous and loving, kind person. She was just so full of life, full of love, full of energy for everyone. She would give everyone the time of day, no matter who they were. She didn't care what background people came from. She didn't care who people were. She dealt with everyone in a really, really caring and respectful way. And she would just bounce into my house all full of life and hugs. And, you know, she was always curious from the minute she could speak. All she kept asking us was why, but why, but why. So she was always the most inquisitive girl. And once she got something into her head, there was literally no stopping her from doing it. You know, she was brave. She was so many things to us, but she was the most caring girl that anyone could really ever have met. Do you know, if she was your friend, she would be the most loyal friend that you could ever know. I mean, if you said to her, oh, I need a new pair of shoes, do you know, she'd go as far as take her shoes off to give you them. Do you know, this is the kind of generous nature that she had. And, do you know, she came through a lot of struggles as a child, you know, health issues, etc. She had learning difficulties in school, and she overcame all of those challenges and with the support of every member of our family to help her to achieve her dreams. So the very fact that her dreams have now been stolen from her, you know, it's devastating that she'd worked so hard to reach the stage where they might just come true, and then everything was stolen from her. But, you know, she was the kindest, most generous soul in the world. I adored her. She adored me. We were each other's cheerleaders. And I just wish I could have her back today.